This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. Beautiful day out there today. Got up early this morning. Had the mayor's prayer breakfast, and that was over at the Embassy Suites. And really had a great time over there. Really a lot of nice people from the community, and it's one of the more enjoyable times that you can have. And I have Mr. Jim Clardy on today, and he is not from the local Clardys, and we're talking about the Clardy House, the guest house that's out right there on East Main, because I remember when I first ran into you, I asked you that question. And we're going to let you know that Jim Clardy's show today is brought to you by At Home Care, and it's located at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And you can also reach them at 713-4639 or pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And that's Melissa Warren's business. And they come into your home 24/7 when you're no longer able to take care of the responsibilities in your home. And there may be a possibility that you may have to leave and go to a place where they can actually take care of you. But you don't have to do that anymore. All you have to do is call that number, 713-4639. They'll be in your home 24/7, taking care of all the responsibilities inside your house. And actually, they'll run errands for you. So this is one of those things that comes up that really gives you some pride and be able to keep your ownership of your home. Now, Mr. Jim Clardy, you're an interesting fellow. I ran into you some years ago, and that's when Buddy Royston was becoming a Methodist preacher.
Yes.
And you guys were kind of checking him out a little bit. What do you think about Buddy?
Buddy is a very close personal friend of mine. And, of course, at the time, I was serving as the district superintendent, and he of the Methodist organization here in Middle Tennessee. And Buddy was serving the Bell Buckle United Methodist Church.
Beautiful church over there.
And did a tremendous job there, a great job. He was well-loved. And, you know, Buddy is entrepreneurial, I guess you might say.
Very much so.
He's got that sense of the big picture, the vision. He's a visionary. And, you know, he's serving over at the Laverne First United Methodist Church now. They built a beautiful new sanctuary, running something like 250 in worship, and got a strong Sunday school program, got a good staff. And he's very indebted to you, I think, because he served as a chaplain for you and
he actually started the SRO program in Rutherford County and did such an excellent job with it.
Well, and, you know, he loved children, the youth, and just would do anything in the world that he can. And Buddy, as far as I'm concerned, he's a great guy, and I'll always be indebted to him for his friendship.
How's Joy Edwards doing? Not Edwards now, but how's Joy doing?
Now,
She became a Methodist minister, and I can't remember where. I think she has a place down in Giles County.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Joy? She may have come after.
I think she must have.
I think she did come after, because we're talking about the last two or three years.
Yeah, I'm sorry that. See, I've been retired for 6 years, and there may have been some things come along here that I may not be familiar with. But I'm sure she's done a great job because...
She is super. Don Edwards' widow.
Okay.
And that was at my church, which was at Southeast Baptist. And then she decided she wanted to become a minister and does a really a great job.
I'm sorry I'm not as acquainted with her.
Oh, you've missed something by not knowing Joy.
You'll have to tell me more about her.
Now, you're not originally from this area.
There are some Clardys here and in Bedford County, a bunch of them.
Yeah, I know the Clardys here.
And I think we are related, going way back. And, you know, you go back several generations. There is some relationships. But my family is from Anderson and Sherwood, Tennessee, down in Franklin County, where Winchester is the county seat. That's where we all went to school. And that's where I'm from, a little community on the Crow Creek, there in the Crow Creek Valley. You know, Truman, the creek runs down the valley, the railroad track runs the valley, and the road. And any activity that goes on is right between those foothills there. And it was a great place to grow up.
That is an interesting area, of course. When you start thinking of Franklin County, you start thinking of the Majors family. Guy Dotson is from that area. I mean, it's really an impact county that has impacted a lot of other communities.
I think there was an important football coach not too far from here that grew up there and played on the Franklin County team, didn't he?
Now, which one are we talking about?
Fulmer.
Phil Fulmer, is that his name?
Yeah.
Actually, you know, it's strange at how that area impacted the University of Tennessee, isn't it?
It really is. And the Majors family, of course, well known. And, yes. And, you know, they were really good people. And they're from the Huntland area, which is just a little bit.
Not too far away.
Yeah, it's south of Winchester there, almost on the Alabama line.
Well, you know, Larry's been on my show a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And just an absolute prince of a guy. I just love him to death. And actually, he and Guy Dotson had a show together on my show. And it was just unbelievable. I didn't have to say anything. I just sat back and enjoyed myself.
You know, I've got a pastor friend in Lynchburg, and he tells me that Johnny stops in and visits him and the church there when he's in town. So, and they always have a good time.
Now, did you guys do like we did, cross over into Moore County and go to Ms. Bobo's? That is absolutely. If you've never eaten at Ms. Bobo's, you have really missed a treat.
Well, you know, in the job I'm in now, I work with a lot of older adults, and we go down there pretty frequently still today, and have a wonderful time when we go to Lynchburg. The last time I was there, we were right in the middle of a tornado, but fortunately nobody was hurt. But it did some damage in the town.
Now you're one of those guys that. You say you're retired, but you'll never retire. You're too intense in doing something and making a difference.
Well, my brother called me the other day and asked me when I was going to retire. And, you know, we talked about that, and he said something like it. He said, you're different from me. And his name's Charles. We call him Chuck. And he said, Jim, you get up in the morning, and every morning you got to have a cliff to jump off of. So, you know, it's the way you're made up.
Now you go to St. Mark's.
I am the executive pastor at St. Mark's, and when I retired as the district superintendent of the Methodist Church here in the Murfreesboro district 6 years ago, I was asked to become the associate pastor.
Now, what does that mean?
At St. Mark's. Well, the associate, actually, they've changed the title now, and I'm the executive pastor.
No more money, huh?
No, it's just, you know, it's kind of a status thing, I guess. But, you know, you and I have both been around long enough. Status doesn't really matter. It's whether or not God's giving you the gift to do the job and how you use what you have. So the name doesn't mean a whole lot. But it's a great opportunity to be in service and service to this community. You know, we're involved in so many different things. I have specific responsibilities out there with the older adult ministry team. This morning, for example, we have been delivering what we call May baskets.
Oh, yeah.
And and so we take these out to our homebound, and they're about 25 or 30 of those. And, you know, those folks, they like what's in the basket, but the thing that they like most is what you and I are doing right now.
Right.
That's visiting with whomever comes to see them.
People don't know how much that means to people when they get older.
Yeah, it really does mean a lot. And, you know, I just enjoy visiting with those folks, and I still
love them. Why don't you and I get together?
One
something,
person
something,
that you
fly off to heaven.
Is Bertha Critchburg.
Yes, sir.
Who was in recreation at the university, and I had an opportunity to visit with her. And that lady has made such an impact on this community. I went to one of the receptions out here on the Greenway when, you know, they designated a spot there in her honor.
Right.
And she came up to me and said, Jim, I've never had a rock named after me before. So they've got an engraving there, you know. And had an opportunity to just sit down and visit with her for a little while, and her wisdom, her love for nature, her love for God, and her understanding and appreciation for this community, those are the kinds of experiences that I have every single day of my life as a result of the opportunity to be on staff out at St. Mark's. I'm also related to the Stephen Ministry Program, and it's a ministry where that confidentially trained individuals who are actually professional minister with folks that are going through difficult times. Mm-hmm. I work with evangelism. I try to support our senior pastor. And incidentally, I wish you'd have him on sometime, Craig Goff. He is a prince of a guy. He served with me in Mount Juliet when he was my youth director back there many years ago. Mm-hmm. And now I'm having an opportunity to spend some time with him here many years later. And Truman, we have the best time in the world. We really do. So those are a few of the things that I do.
You know, I've talked to Buddy and other ministers before, and being a minister, pastor, or whatever, related to a lot to what I used to do as sheriff, because you're dealing with people's problems. Mm-hmm. You're trying to uplift them. You're trying to make their lives better. But a lot of times you receive the stress that they have back on you.
That's right.
And it's a continuous thing. And a lot of people that are in a church, they will rely on their minister quite a lot when they're going through difficult times.
Hey, with that said, may I turn the tables on you?
Sure.
Tell us a couple of things you learned from being sheriff all those years.
There's a lot of things that I learned about being sheriff.
Give us a couple of them.
All right. One of the number one things that I learned being a sheriff is that our responsibilities are directly to the people that we serve.
Okay.
You have to make their lives better. You utilize whatever tools that you have to reach out to them. A lot of people think that law enforcement is just one of these things that answers calls and you arrest people for doing things that are wrong. But still, you're in the business of shaping people's lives. You have given an awesome responsibility. It's a responsibility like you would have as a minister. It's a calling for you. It's something that you use for a better purpose. But being that said, as you do that, as you accept all the stresses of the people that you're working with and dealing with and trying to change their lives, it has an effect on you. A lot of it is positive, but you have some negative things, too. You have to draw back from time to time and to get away from the war zone, the fray, or however you want to look at it. And you have to learn to cope and adapt with that. And that's one of the hardest things to do, because I know it's taken its toll on a lot of people. It takes its toll on everybody.
Yeah, and it takes a lot of maturity.
It does.
Because, I mean, you're dealing with things every day that impact people's lives and impacts your life.
But you're back into it. You're back doing a lot of the same things.
Well, I retired. I've been retired two or three times. You know, I was privileged to serve.
You're an emeritus, right?
You know, I was privileged to serve in the military. I served as a chaplain for 23, 24 years. We got somebody over here that I want to introduce to you in a minute whose life was impacted by the early experience of Desert Storm. I served for many, many years as a United Methodist pastor, and in 2000 I retired so that this fellow sitting over here, I would not have to move, and he could finish school here. And then after I retired, they asked me to come over there, so I'm working on about my third or fourth retirement now. But I hope I never have to turn. I hope I don't ever have to, you know, go to the house.
You'll never do that.
No, I want to be out there going, man. I'll be honest with you, that's my prayer. Now, my wife may have something different to say about that, but that's where I am, and that's what I want to do.
Well, I can tell that he's the light of your life right now. So introduce him.
Okay, if these guys over here, I don't know if we can get the microphone around, but this is JP, it's my son, and he goes by the name of Hippie Train. How you like that?
Hippie Train.
Yeah. I'm not going to ask him to explain that name. But Trish and I were married for 17 years thinking we're never going to be able to have any children.
Bless your heart.
One day she came to the office, having gone to the doctor, and she said, you might ought to sit down.
Uh-oh.
And she told me that she was expecting. And this is a result of that. And in 5 months after he was born, then I got the call to, to serve my country,
right,
which I did, went to the first Desert Storm. And, you know, that might be something good to talk about a little bit.
You didn't go with Chuck Thomas, did you?
I went with everybody.
Because I have heard all these stories, and I'm not too sure how many of them I can believe.
Well, they're probably, most of them are all true. So after I got back and he got a little older, one night we had been to a Christmas Eve service at one of the local churches. I play guitar a little bit, but not like
really?
He.
Yeah. All
right. And he asked me, we were sitting on the sofa after that, and we got back to the house. He said, Dad, show me how to play Silent Night. So I showed him how to play that on the guitar.
On the guitar? Wow.
And then he just immediately, he played it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that right then that he had some gifts. And so he's developed this and gone to Belmont and has his degree in music and commercial performance and guitar from Belmont. He'll be graduating on Saturday.
Wow.
So I asked him, I didn't know what your format would be today, but I asked him if he would come and just do something for us that might be appropriate. I never know what he's going to do.
Everything is open on this show.
Okay, all right. Now, hear what he said, but now don't get too wild on this,
now, tell them what you're going to do.
Okay, Mr. Truman.
Now, don't call me Mr. Truman.
Mr. Jones. Truman.
What, Truman will do.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I'm honored, and I feel like it's a privilege to be on your show today, and I'd like to thank you and Daddy.
I'm very honored to have both of you on.
And, well, I go by the stage name of Hippie Train.
Now, how did you pick that out?
Well, my friends have been calling me that since I was 12.
Now, there has to be a reason.
I cannot.
You don't look like a hippie to me.
Well, I'm hippie in the peace and love sense.
Oh, okay.
Oh, watch out now.
Now, you're not one of these flower children now, are you?
Not exactly.
Okay. Now, we've got one here already. We got Zach here already. We don't need another one.
I'm hippie in the peace and love sense, but I'm fierce like a train.
Oh, all right.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, I mean, it started in middle school. My friends started calling me JJ Hippie Train.
Uh-huh.
And I performed at a lot of talent shows, and everyone loved it. And it just, I started playing electric guitar when I was about 12, and it,
wow,
I got really into rock and roll. And
what was it almost like Jim was saying that it's a gift? Because I've known a lot of people could pick up and play almost any instrument ever made, and I don't understand how they do it.
Absolutely. It's a gift from God. It's not me.
Wow. So when you have your musical reviews, say like if you're on a talent show, like you mentioned earlier, what do you like to play?
Well, I enjoy basically straight up rock and roll. Rock and roll music is what I love to play, but that encompasses many genres and styles.
Are we talking like Bill Haley in the Comets?
We're talking later than that.
You don't
more
know
70s
who that
rock
is,
and roll.
Do you?
I do know who Bill Haley in the Comets is, actually. I love Bill Haley in the Comets. I'm talking, I was very influenced by Led Zeppelin by an early age, and
yeah,
I learned their entire catalog.
Uh-huh.
And Jimmy Page is probably one of my biggest influences, if not my biggest influence, on just guitar playing.
Uh-huh.
He created many different tunings, studio innovations that, I mean, people still don't know how he did today. I mean, it's into question, you know. He was one of the biggest creative minds in that time period, mm-hmm, and still very prevalent today.
Do you write yourself?
I do.
Now, are you going to perform one of your songs,
sure,
that you have written?
Sure, I will.
Fire them and tell us what the name of it is.
Well, this is called Snapshot of Your Soul.
Ooh.
This came, the inspiration for this song came after I read The Great Gatsby,
uh-huh,
for the second time.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that the character of Jay Gatsby, it's almost like I was looking in the mirror into that character, and I saw a lot of my qualities
in Gatsby,
in Jay Gatsby.
Whoa.
The longing, the dreaming, the in vain, Mm-hmm. And originally, I wrote this for my third-year writing class, my junior year, and the opening line was, I'm going to tell you a story about a man named Gatsby. And I go by the name JP. Mm-hmm. That's my other name. That's my other nickname. But so when I performed it for my class, I said, I'm going to tell you about a man named Gatsby. And since then, I've changed it to, I'm going to tell you about a man named JP. Mm-hmm. So I'll just start it up here.
Okay.
Tragedy. Clawing at some broken dream. Dwelling on perpetual fantasy. Oh no. Well, I hope you know you're not your car, not your clothes. Grotesque rose. A snapshot of your soul, you know. Some party cannot hide your pain. Neither can some blacked out name. No, it can't. And will you ever feel the same? Or has lost the love left you insane? Oh, I can't let go. I got a fragile ego, a cosmic foe. You're gonna reap just to what you sow. You know that you know, you know, you don't have to ask. Well, trembling toward a strange green light. Vanishing into the night. And passion burns a blazing bright. But is your whole life worth that fight? I sure hope not. For all time low, this is the last blow. Woe is woe. Blood ends the freak show. You gotta let it go. His grave, or even step inside his cave. And I wonder, after all he gave, well, is his spirit still a slave? Oh, I wonder sometimes, you know, I look into my eyes and I think, is this whole thing just a disguise? You know, I get so scared and I ask myself, is this thing fight or flight? Oh, the world, is it black or white? I've seen a little gray a couple of places in my life, you know. I might call up my dad and ask him if he's got all the answers, you know. I just look inside. No, I think about it.
Good job. I could almost see Gatsby floating face down in the pool right now. Now, what was, since you have been reading about Gatsby.
Right.
What was the mystery about him?
I believe Gatsby fell in love and he couldn't let it go. and that drove him to the point of insanity and delusion.
And he had a dark side anyway.
He had a dark side. I believe we all have a dark side. I believe we were born into it, and we have to fight that. It's a civil war. St. Paul called it a civil war. It's a daily fight, struggle.
Does Jim have a dark side?
You know, I'm going to go ahead and say that he's been sanctified.
Oh, hallelujah.
Oh, he jumped out of that one, didn't he?
Hey, that's a fur piece for most 2 minute and 20 second songs that we grew up in. It.
Oh, didn't you love those songs?
Oh, yeah. You know, I tried, I grew up on Ernest Tubb and Hank Williams and all of those guys. Oh, I love Ray Price and all those folks, you know. And
I can sing that, too.
You know, I used to have to. There's one thing about being the age I am and having a child the age he is, and he being the only child. See, when I was coming along back in the early 60s, when I was called into the ministry, you know, I was expected to preach against Led Zeppelin, you know, man, and all that devil's music and all of that, man. We'd light a fire and burn that stuff up, you know. But then when I had a child, it came along with a kind of appreciation of the music that he does. Then I had to go back and re-examine the stuff that he was reading and the songs that he was hearing and make sure that I was acquainted and I knew what he was growing up with. So, Truman, I've kind of lived 2 or 3 different lives having a child the age, you know, the age he is. I don't know about your – I met your grandchildren. I don't know much about the rest of your family. But it's just been a – it's been a powerful experience to live through these 22 years, you know, with a child like James Patrick. And he is a good kid. He is a good kid.
Yeah, you think about and you study human experiences and human nature. Almost every generation has something that comes up that conflicts with their parents' generations. And then, of course, you had that with the grandparents. We all remember when rock and roll first came out.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of the biggest changes in culture and how the children would conflict with their parents and authority and things like that. And I can remember that it really wasn't looked at too favorably when we would have dances when rock and roll was getting started, because it's more like, as they would say back then, it was the devil's instrument, and it was not good. It was going to pretty much destroy the life that they all knew. Every one of us has gone from generation to generation and run into the same obstacles.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that doesn't mean that we don't appreciate other kinds of music, you know.
Sure it does.
I mean, when I was growing up, I mean, I didn't even know that there was anything classical music, you know, until I got to college and was made to take music appreciation, because I grew up on that old mountain music, which I still love today.
Oh, I thought you guys played Caruso and everything else over there.
We had our Carusos, but they didn't do
you
that.
You probably did like we did. You'd sit on the front porch with a battery-operated radio and listen to WSCM Clear Channel.
And the Grand Ole Opry. You know, you'd sit up all night on Saturday night, man, listening to the music. And I still do that. I love that music. But I have learned through the years, particularly with young people, music is a powerful, powerful communicator.
It is.
And if somehow you don't have the ability to manage that in a way that the tool or the message of the music is not permitted to come through, you're just missing you're missing that generation. Even in our church, with our young people and in our congregation, music is a powerful communicator.
You know, in church, that's one of the things that's so interesting when you're talking about generations, is how you deal with each generation in church. You have the older ones who have their own class, and then you have the young families, and then you have the teenagers and the younger kids. Is that a difficult thing to deal with as far as being able to reach all of them?
That is a... that is a major job, I can tell you. And there are some churches, and I could name these, and I could give you all the technical terms and all of that, which I won't do, but there are some churches that designate their audience. And if they're trying to reach the under 30 crowd, then that's the kind of music they play, that's the kind of message they give. But in a church like ours, I mean, we've got them from 2 months old to 100. And being able to communicate across that wide chasm of these age spans, it is a major challenge. And I think the only way that we can succeed as that is with the power of the Holy Spirit at work, you know.
Well, you know, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Strap into a 2012 Ford Escape at Ford of Murfreesboro. Get up to $2,650 cash back or finance at unbelievable rates like 0% for up to 60 months. Price excludes tax, title, and registration and $499 dealer fee. The offer expires April 30th. Ford of Murfreesboro is your home to the brand new 2012 Ford Escape. Visit Ford of Murfreesboro today on Broad Street at the intersection of Northfield Boulevard and online at fordofmurfreesboro.com.
The Bunganut Pig is back and better than ever in the borough.
I'm with Mark Goodson, the new owner of the Bunganut Pig here in Murfreesboro. Mark, tell us a little bit about the Bunganut Pig.
The store's been open for 17 years. If you haven't eaten with us, we hand cut and hand trim all of our ribeye, and we guarantee the best burger in town.
They should expect a smoke-free environment, open to all ages, and great food, great drink.
Now at the Bunganut Pig, every Monday and Tuesday night is trivia night. Bunganut Pig is on Northfield Boulevard in the Georgetown Square.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, and AmeriCare Pest Control.
If you're planning to buy a home, choose a professional that will look out for you. Ann Hoke & Associates has a proven track record of helping guide clients through the home buying experience. Whether buying your first home, moving up, downsizing, or investing, Ann's team will help you do it right. When it's your time to buy or sell, just ask Ann.
This is Ann Hoke of Keller Williams Realty. I would love to personally talk with you. Call me today at 397-4024. Sell faster and buy smarter with Ann Hoke & Associates.
Let's look ahead at some Good Neighbor events now. The 23rd Annual Lions Fish for Sight Tournament will be Saturday morning, May the 12th, over at Fate Sanders Marina on the Percy Priest Lake. Up to $3,000 in prizes. You don't want to miss that one. And the entry forms are available at Murfreesboro Outdoors at 2204 Northwest Broad. Or for more information, call 848-3387. Hey, sign up to be a part of the Greenway 100 you have between now and May the 19th of next year to walk 100 miles on the Greenway. You can do it. Phone Melinda Tate at the Murfreesboro Parks and Recreation Department at 893-2141 for more information. And the March of Dimes for Babies is coming up Sunday, May the 6th. Registration's at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and the walk is at 2. And this is in front of the DePaul Medical Building at Middle Tennessee Medical Center. You give hope to the more than 500,000 babies born prematurely each year. Phone 399-3200. And there is no Iris show this year at SunTrust Bank. Yep, the annual Iris show has been canceled. That's because of the early blooming of our state flower. And those are Good Neighbor events.
It's the Truman Show, a look at the people and news shaping Rutherford County with Truman Jones.
And welcome back with us. And we want to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by Gordon Ralston Photography. That's at 315 Hickerson Drive, Murfreesboro. And you can reach them at 396-8776 or on the internet, www.gordonralstonphoto.com. And that's our local guys, Al Gordon, a master craftsman photographer, and Larry Ralston, certified craftsman, are the most awarded studio in the Middle Tennessee area operating a full-service photographic studio in Murfreesboro. They specialize in weddings, high school seniors, and family portraits. Their work is classic yet current with a creative edge. Al was even awarded the Grand Award for the best wedding image in the world. Gordon Ralston, and they look forward to meeting you and will treat you like family. And they are like family to me and I think a lot of other people because they grew up here and they've meant a lot to this community. And Jim, you're a fascinating fella. You have done a lot of things. I mean, you've had a radio career. You've just kind of crossed the entire specter.
You know, I was just sitting here thinking a while ago, back in either the late 60s, early 70s, I was a pastor out at a little church out here called Haynes Chapel.
Know it well.
United Methodist, by yes. The cemetery out to Coleman.
Yes.
I think Uncle Dave's, he's still out there, isn't he?
Yes, as far as I know.
Okay. And I used to come up here to this very station, I think it's on this same level, and do a radio program on Sunday morning. Did that for a couple of years while I was pastor out there.
Wow.
And called the just in case there's somebody that might remember, that I can't imagine this title, but the radio program was called The Rural Church. Because I had a lot of interest at that time in trying to give the best attention and care to these churches out in the country, because I thought they had a lot to offer, and I still do love those. And speaking of you mentioned the news director, I did serve down in Cowan, Tennessee. I served as a news director at one time down there.
Now, what'd you do as a news director? Did you ring a bell on the square and he had his loudspeaker?
Sometimes the manager, he would complain. He'd come in there and say, Jim, I've had to read these news stories over three times during this period. But, you know, sometimes it was hard to keep up with everything that was going on or find something to report on. I remember back when all these hijackings were taking place, we had a guy who lived in Cowan who was on one of the planes that had been hijacked to Havana.
Oh, wow.
And so they sent me out there and they interviewed him. And, man, it was just thrilling to hear him tell of that experience. Of course, he was safe and, you know, nobody got hurt. But that's one little thing. And another thing in Monteagle at the time, they were trying to develop a Swiss colony down there. And, you know, I think I even went down to Helena, Georgia, you know, and interviewed and did some things. That never did pan out. They never did do that. But those are the kind of things. And then you'd always report on the school board, you know. And, man, some of those things were interesting to report on because I knew a lot of the people and knew the personalities. But Joe would not let us, you know, you could not interject any of if you wanted to kind of characterize somebody as being funny or being intelligent, or he was doing that in his characteristic way, you know, they wouldn't let you put any of those personal characterizations of somebody. I don't know if it's changed today. I think it has. But, you know, those are some of the things that I had an opportunity to participate back in back then. It was, and again, and one of my favorite words is fascinating. It was fascinating. It was just tremendous, great.
Now, the one thing about it being in a small community like that, everybody in the community probably knew what happened before you ever got it.
One of the
they have great communications.
There was a well-known lawyer in town, and somebody had accused a certain guy of stealing another fellow's hay baler. And this lawyer took the case, and as it was reported, he convinced the jury that a cow ate the hay baler. And so his client, you know, got off and went scot-free. And those stories, you know, I could tell you a thousand of those. Those were great. Those were great.
In small communities like that, like it used to be over there, a lot of times it would almost pit family against family.
That's right.
And you know, it's hard to be impartial in those type
of
things. And that would be very difficult as a news announcer or someone on the radio to not offend someone.
Well, it's difficult to do anything and not offend somebody, you know. And you're in a job where you can't win, you know. But I appreciate the fact that you're doing such a good job with this radio show, and you seem to be enjoying that. It sounds like you got good sponsors.
I do, and I'm enjoying it more than anybody, I think, because, you know, people don't realize how much fun and interesting it is to meet new people and receive their ideas and find some of the things that are interesting to them. It's better than any entertainment that I know of.
You know,
me.
I do have to thank you for something. You know, when we were out at the school a couple of years ago, I was a surrogate grandparent.
Mm-hmm.
For a little girl in our church, because the parents couldn't go, and you were there and with your grandchildren, and you asked me how my members were doing, and I said, well, I've got one over there that I'm concerned that he's not giving enough.
I bet I know who that is.
And you asked me who it was, and I said, well, you ought to know him really well. And he said, is it Mike? And I said, yes.
Yeah. That was an easy answer.
You got right on the phone and called him, and you told him he was going to have to shape up and start putting a little more into plate on Sunday morning. And I think the other day when we were in Woodbury at the Duck Hunter show, you know.
Oh, great show.
That's a great show. And Mike was sitting right in front of us, and he said, you need to be on Truman's show. And I reminded him, I said, yeah. He kind of got after you about putting a little more into plate, and man, he almost fell out of his chair. So thank you for that.
I tell you what, you know, having you and Hippie Train on today, believe me, it's a joy for me. It really is.
You know, one day he came in and he said, "I'm going to write a song. I've got a song," and I said, "What is it?" He said, "Supernova." And I got him to explain that to me, and he wrote this song, and I think he would like to play that.
We'd love to hear it. Ken, did you understand how he was explaining that? Did it really?
Well, you know, he's a pretty good teacher.
Uh-huh.
But
I don't see you as the hippie type. For some reason, it doesn't compute.
Hey, listen, I still remember all Billy Bird.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So let's see how this goes. Would you let him play it?
Yes, sir. Fire on.
Well, this is, again, I'd like to say it's an honor and privilege to be here, Truman. I really appreciate you letting me play. And this is called Supernova Sight. And this is actually the story behind this song is I was sitting in the back seat of my parents' car. And, you know, as a preacher's kid, you get dragged to a lot of things.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of those things turn out to be a blessing.
Uh-huh.
And I've met so many wonderful people through the years.
How many of them turned out to be boring?
I abstain from answering that question. But
hey, listen, he's eaten a lot of fried pies and chocolate cake through the years.
By virtue of being Methodist, I get a lot of fried chicken.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm not complaining. But I was sitting in the back seat of my parents' car, and I looked up, and it was one of those days where you can see the moon really well in the daytime. And I thought, you know, I wonder if the moon looks kind of lonely up there. I wonder if he or she or it ever feels like me. And I sat down, and for some reason, this just lick popped out, and the words just fell into place. It's funny how it works out like that. But
give us a few of those guitar licks.
Here it goes.
Being a creative person, I understand.
What do you see? I bet you feel lonely sometimes, babe. Bet you feel like me. Hey, stars, why so bright but so far? Well, don't you dare put up those walls, 'cause you might grow up and fall. Get hooked, you don't really want it. Don't think that's right. When you fall down, you look up to see it. Supernova sight. Won't you get hooked, you don't really want it. I don't think that's right. And when you fall down, you look up to see it. Supernova sight. sky. Don't even try to tell me that you don't cry. 'Cause I see you doing it, babe, doing it all the time. Whoa, son, well, just how long do you think that you can last? Well, it's okay, 'cause one day everything's gonna pass. So you better think about it. And when you get hooked, you don't really want it. Don't think that's right. And when you fall down, you look up to see it. Supernova side. Once you get hooked, you don't really want it. I don't think that's right. And when you fall down, you look up to see it. Supernova side. Let it ride in the sky. Listen, people, when you look up, don't you be afraid. 'Cause down here we're sitting in the grass, you know we got it made. And once you get hooked, you don't really want it. Don't think that's right. And when you fall down, you look up to see it. Supernova side. Once you get hooked, you don't really want it. Don't think that's right. And when you fall down, you look up to see it. Supernova side.
There it is.
Good job. Yeah. Now, when you you're about ready to graduate, right?
Yes, sir. At Belmont. Saturday.
When you're a music major,
yes.
Do you have to work up a composition of some type for your graduate work?
Well, I did have to do two recitals as a performance mm-hmm. emphasis. You can be a composition emphasis. Mm-hmm. Performance and composition are two mm-hmm. different areas. That
right.
You can, and I did not have to compose anything in particular for my recitals. Mm-hmm. I did do a couple of originals on my junior recital. On my senior recital, I focused more on doing a fusion jazz genre.
So you could work on any type of genre you want to.
Absolutely.
You're not confined at all.
Well, I did have to take classical guitar for 2 years, my first 2 years, mm-hmm. and I studied the Common Practice era music, mm-hmm. You know, just like any other. But the virtue of being a Belmont student is that mm-hmm. in your last 2 years, you have the freedom to broaden yourself with other genres and styles and study jazz or fusion or rock or anything that you want to study. So.
Can you use almost any type of instrument you want to play?
Well, you do have to pick an emphasis.
So your emphasis would be guitar?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
JP played trumpet. He played a French horn. What's the instrument that you marched with?
Mellophone.
Mellophone. He came home one day when he was in high school. I didn't even know he could do this, and he mm-hmm. came home and... He said, I said, what have you been doing? He said, well, I've been playing for the talent show. Mm-hmm. And I said, what did you do? He said, well, this young lady asked me to play the piano while she sang. Mm-hmm. So he played the piano for her, and I didn't even know he could do that.
And I'm an actor.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he loves drama, too.
I played Huck Finn at Center for the Arts down here a couple years ago.
Oh, did you?
I did, and I was Charlie Brown my senior year of high school at Riverdale. So.
What had you rather do? Had you rather be in the acting part or a musical part, or what do you really like? Because I know that I was talking to Jim, and of course he mentioned the fact that he was over in Cannon County in Woodbury at the arts place there, and
very good.
It's amazing how much talent that we've got here in this particular area. Of course, we've had a number of people on national television
Absolutely.
Shows here that have become big stars, and it just seems like it's a hotbed of talent here. And I saw that particular show, the angels that shoot the duck hunters that shoot the angel.
You know, those two guys from Alabama reminded me so much of how I grew up, you know. And
I think we all can relate to it a little
great.
Bit.
Hey, let me tell you about JP. When he was a little bitty fella, I used to take him with me. I used to do a lot of revivals. Mm-hmm. And when his mom couldn't go, I'd take JP with me, and I'd set him up on the front seat. And when it came time to get up to speak, I'd look down at him and I'd say, "Son, what would you like to hear me preach on tonight?" And he would come up with some of the craziest.
It wasn't rehearsed
at
all.
No, it wasn't rehearsed. And one night he really got me because I said, "What would you like me to preach on tonight?" And he looked up at me just as seriously. He said, "Daddy, preach on baptism." And I knew then that I was going to have to dig deeply to really come out with something that would be, you know, meaningful tonight. So, you know, he and I have had, we've had this kind of give and take. And some of the greatest times, well, you need to take a break. I want to come back and tell you one other thing.
Okay, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The time is now. Bob wants option. The time is now.
A tractor, a mower, tools, antiques, and personal property will all be auctioned off on Saturday, May 5th at 10 a.m. The auction is at 3980 Bradyville Road in Reedyville. Again, this auction, tractors, mowers, and more at 3980 Bradyville Road in Reedyville. See pictures at bobparksauction.com.
Bob Boyd's Auction.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Jordan, an orthopedic surgeon with Middle Tennessee Medical Center. As the official health care providers of the MTSU Blue Raiders, we know the importance of getting players healthy and back in the game. Middle Tennessee Medical Center provides comprehensive orthopedic care with expertise to return each patient to an active and functional lifestyle. Our team is highly experienced in orthopedic and joint replacement surgery, which means better outcomes and quicker recoveries. To make an appointment with an MTMC orthopedic specialist, call 615-284-BONE.
Slick Pig Barbecue. Down on East Main, there's pork, beef, chicken, and wings. Sauce too good to be true.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the catfish special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all you can eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw.
Slick Pig Barbecue, 1920 East Main.
He knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Jim Clardy.
Hey, I was going to tell you some of the most precious times, and anyone who's a parent can relate to this. But, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, you just sense there's somebody standing by your bed.
Mm-hmm.
And OJP would be there, and he said, "Dad, I need to talk with you."
Mm.
You know, and always, I think he'll tell you, I always tried whenever he needed to talk.
Mm-hmm.
I always was there because if he needed to talk, I needed to hear what he was saying.
Right.
And I'll say this in his presence. I think that is some of the things that I'll remember and are most precious. And you know, used to when he was in the band, you know, they were out all hours of the night going to this competition, and I'd have to get up 2 o'clock in the morning and go pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
But as the farther I get away from those experiences, Truman, the more precious they become.
Of course, yeah.
And if I had anything to say as a parent, as a pastor, because, you know, I've dealt with parents and children from who have made great things of their life to being in prison and done everything under the sun. But I just don't think that you can do anything any more special in this world than try to be a good parent. And we're certainly not perfect at it. He can tell you every hypocritical bone in my body. He can tell you every inconsistency.
They're far and few between.
Oh, well, but I just I think that for all of us who have children, there cannot be a more important calling than to be a good parent.
You're exactly right.
I'm beginning to preach
now. In that particular area, I think that we have not been holding up our end in the last few years. I really don't. We see a lot, and it's one of the saddest things to see a child out there without a good role model at home and no one to talk to. And that's where a lot of our problems come from.
Well, I think it's critical.
Critical.
You wanted me to tell you one of the stories that I love to tell. You know, Mike He says,
"That's
you know,
Mike
you know,
Jones.
Yeah, Mike
James
Jones.
Michael Jones.
Yeah, James Michael. I had an uncle, Uncle Felix, who in the summer would sit out on the shade tree, and the shade tree kind of would hang out over the road.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be people, you know, always would stop there and ask him, you know, how do you get to Stevenson, or how do you get to Suwanee, or how do you get to Nashville?"
Mm-hmm.
And he had a way of disarming people, but he'd always say, "You know, if I was going to Nashville, I wouldn't start from here." And one day a guy came down the road on a motorcycle,
mm-hmm.
and Uncle Felix wanted to ride the motorcycle, and the guy said, "It'll kill you."
Mm-hmm.
And Uncle Felix said, "Oh, anybody can ride a horse, can ride a motorcycle. So he got on that motorcycle and started out to the barn, and he hadn't been 50 feet till that thing turned over and broke his leg.
Mm.
And, you know, he was lying there in the road just a crying and carrying on and calling out for help. And, well, all of us kids, we were standing over behind the tree just dying, laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, you know, how all of these stories that and what you saw when you grew up as a kid,
mm-hmm.
they get we enhance them and try to find the moral in them. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Do you in your church? You, I presume you have an organ.
We do have an organ. We don't have a pipe organ right now.
Oh, you don't?
But we have one of these consoles,
mm-hmm.
and man, we've got great musicions.
You know, we're only about 19 miles from the organ factory over in Eagleville, Milnar's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dennis Milnar's place.
Right.
You guys need to go over there.
Well,
you talk about sounds. His organs have the most beautiful sounds in the world, and what he can do with one is unreal. An artist.
Yeah, and that's a great name,
mm-hmm.
a professional name for that kind of instrument. It's just a wonderful name. I wonder if JP might do us a little bit of Working Man Blues.
Yeah. Working Man Blues.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you do a little of that? Just a little bit of it? How long has it been since you've done that?
I can do it.
All right, a little bit of that.
It's a hard job just to get by with 9 kids and a wife. But I've been a working man, dang near all my life, and I'll go out working as long as my 2 hands are fit to use. I'm gonna drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working man blues.
I loved hearing
God,
play that.
Good job.
I loved hearing play that too. That's, you know, we grew up on that.
You grew up on that.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah, I sure did.
Now, what was your class year?
I graduated in 1963 from high school.
Oh, wow. So you got your big 50 coming up next year.
Got it coming up, and we're going to have a big deal down in Winchester.
Uh-huh.
Young lady there with the name of Lorraine Earle is leading the pack on that. And, you know, everybody communicates on Facebook now, so I'm getting all these messages about.
Except me.
Yeah, well, I don't know much about it either.
I don't care about that.
So. But, yeah, it's coming up, and I'm glad I made it this far, and I'm looking forward to going to the reunion to see all the folks.
Now, how many guys did you have in your class?
Actually, I think we graduated about 500. It was not a small school.
You're a kid.
No, Frank County High School was a big school. You know, I'd rode the bus 30 miles to school, but the school itself was a huge school.
Was that the only school in Franklin County?
Well, it was a high school. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I was there during Jim Lane's tour. You remember him when he was coach?
Uh-huh.
I had the funeral for Jim Lane, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
I sure did. One of them. I think they did 2 or 3 services. But one of the services in Franklin County, I did it.
That is an honor for a family to ask you to say words over their loved ones that have gone. And it's one of the most difficult things in the world. A lot of people don't understand. I've had the honor and the privilege of doing a number over the years, and it's something that really does. It causes you to see things in a different light.
It does, and again, you learn something from everybody's life
mm-hmm.
that helps you make your way through the world,
mm-hmm.
you know, with God's help, you know. Hey, we have really enjoyed being with you today. You getting ready to run us out of here?
No. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at the clock.
What's wrong with the clock? Do you think I'm going to let you off that easy?
Oh, mercy.
I'm not wearing you out. Now, see, this is kind of like returning the favor. Now, all those people that have heard you preach all the years and have been sitting in the pulpits and watching you and waiting and looking at their watches and all of that, I'm helping them get even with you right now.
That's great.
You know, it is so much fun to see somebody like you who has a great sense of humor, who loves life, who loves the ministry, and has an attitude like you, because it's obvious to me that it wasn't a job to you. It was a calling. It was a career that you accepted, and you took full responsibility of making sure that you're enter into as many lives as possible and make their lives better.
You know, I appreciate you using the word calling, using that term, because I believe it is a calling.
Oh, it is.
I had some things happen in my life that I look back now, and it was a clear call, you know, that this is what I'm supposed to do with my life. I think he has that with this call to music. You've had it with your call to public service. Mm-hmm. And to try to be responsive to that is a real challenge, because so often we want to go in, it's our human nature to go in directions that we know God's not calling us to.
And all of us get into comfort zones. I know you've been in churches where you really felt comfort with all the people that you were ministering to in that particular church. And no matter whether it was a large church or a small church. Say if another church, and I've known this to happen many a time, really gets interested in you and they want you there. What does it take for you to change your mind and actually accept going into a new church, accepting new responsibilities? Because I've seen it happen, and for somebody like me, I would probably stay in the comfort zone, because I really enjoy the people that I get to know. I love to be close to people. I enjoy the relationship with them. But it has to be something special other than that.
Well, I am in a you go to a church where you have what is a call system.
Right.
I go to a church that's called an appointed system, where I'm appointed by the bishop.
Yeah, they still do that.
Yeah, and the superintendent. Now, I will tell you, our general conference is meeting in Tampa, and Truman, I think it was yesterday, they just did away with what's called the guaranteed appointment. And I don't know how all of that is going to work out, and don't know what all of the implications of it is yet. Mm-hmm. But the time has come now where no longer in the Methodist Church, if you start out as a Methodist minister, it doesn't mean you're going to wind up as a Methodist minister, because you're not going to have what's called that guaranteed appointment. But now the bishop, you know, would always call me and say, we need you over here, and get your bags packed. And I always tried to be obedient, because when I first had the experience of that call, I took a vow to go where I was sent.
Right.
But I have said, and you know, in the church where you serve, there is good communication with the hierarchy, and If a committee in your church, and we call them in our church, we call them the staff parish committee. If they feel like that for some reason you need to move on, they can call the superintendent and the bishop and give reasons why they feel like that. But I've always taken the position that if you feel like it's time for me to no longer be here, don't make a big fuss at it, don't have a big fight, you just tell me and I'll get out of your hair and go on. And be where I can serve in peace and can do a good job. That's always been my philosophy. But I've been very fortunate through the years to have served some wonderful, wonderful churches. And I have friends all over Middle Tennessee, you know, and all over the state of Tennessee, really all over the world, because of the relationships you build, the experiences that you have together. Mm-hmm. You can't walk through some of the difficult times that you do with people and not build a bond that makes you appreciate each other. It's just, you just can't do it. And so, I have people call me from anywhere, you know, and say, can you do this or can you do that? Mm-hmm. And you know, you've got the responsibility where you're serving at the time, and you may not can go and do it. But it does make you appreciate the fact that this bond, which was developed, just continues to to go on and on and on. And put it in a theological context, we call it eternal. You know, those relationships are wonderful.
I grew up in Church of Christ. Okay. All my family were, just like my brother Mike.
Okay.
He's gone over to the dark side. He's a Methodist now.
Yeah.
And I always found it interesting because we lived at Salem, the closest church to us was a Methodist church, Salem Methodist Church.
Right, and that's right out here.
Yeah, it is. And what I always thought interesting was at that time it was kind of on a circuit. The preacher actually had three churches.
Yeah.
And you really didn't have a minister every Sunday. You had Sunday school,
right,
and those type things. And I always found that kind of odd because I'd never been in a situation like that before.
Well, I've served churches where, you know, you preach at 1 at 9 o'clock and then jump in your car and go to preach the next place,
mm-hmm,
at,
right,
10, and then go to the next one and preach at 11. Mm-hmm.
That would be very difficult.
And I'll tell you, I found through the years that the older I became, the more difficult that became.
Because each church has its own mood, people.
Yeah.
Different directions in some respects.
Yeah, and it takes a lot of energy, you know, to kind of make that fit for that situation at that time, you know. So, we still have a lot of United Methodist churches on what we call the circuit.
Mm-hmm.
So we've probably...
Is that kind of a stepping stone usually?
Well, it is. If you do a good job in the smaller churches, the chances are that you're going to have opportunity to what we call to be promoted.
Right.
But, you know, if you put promotion as the main entity in your life, you're going to be disappointed.
Right.
You try to do a good job and let God use you wherever you are, and then God will take care of the, when you're ready, God will prepare for you a place that will give you more responsibility.
Well, Jim Tracy's been a – Tracy, did I say Jim Tracy?
Well,
I am so sorry, Jim Clardy. It just slipped out of my mouth. I don't know what happened.
He's a good guy, too, isn't he?
He is. And Hippie Train.
Hippie Train.
Is that going to be your name from now on, Hippie Train?
I believe it's set in stone. Can't run away from it.
Great show. I really enjoyed it. A lot of fun. And tell my brother hello when you get to see him.
I will do that.
And Robbie.
Let me just say, I don't know this guy's name over here, but he's been sitting there, been very intent, and I can tell he's very professional. Thank you for taking good care of us.
He's the only professional in this room right now.
We forget the people that take good care of us.
Yes, we do.
And thank you.
And that's Zach Troutman.
Hey, Zach, and I want to thank JP for coming in today, too.
JP did a great job. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Truman.
God bless you, and thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
Please.
See you guys tomorrow at 2 o'clock, and we will have John Frost on tomorrow, and he'll be playing his guitar also.
Okay, right. Yeah.